Your Steve Jones Show podcast is loading now. The Steve Jones Show podcast is sponsored by Sunbury Motors, North 4th Street in Sunbury, and Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Taking your calls at 800-795-9565. This is the Steve Jones Show on News Radio 1070 WKOK. Now from the Sunbury Motors Studio, here's Steve Jones.
Sunbury Motors, 4th Street in Sunbury. Sunbury Motors Kia, routes 11 and 15 in Hummel's Wharf. Great to have you with us on the show today. Time to talk some Major League Baseball with Jared Diamond, Major League Baseball writer for the Wall Street Journal. Jared, welcome. It's great to have you with us on the show.
Thanks for having me.
Let's start with this. You've just written an article about bullpens, which have become so much more important than ever. I was talking to the head baseball coach at Penn State earlier today, and I said, Rob, I said, in the majors, they take out the guy that's throwing 97, and then they bring in a guy that throws 98. What was your take and your angle on bullpens that you wanted to hit in this article?
Well, there are just some numbers going around Major League Baseball right now that I think are very surprising. They were to me, and I'm sure to a lot of other people. And that's just how much bullpens have been struggling in this first month of the season. And that was a surprise because we've seen the game evolve the way it has to where bullpens are such a huge part of the game. Last season, relievers threw over 40% of the innings in Major League Baseball for the first time ever. We've seen teams in the postseason bullpen their way to incredible success. So it was a big shock to me to see that relief pitcher ERA is actually higher than starting pitcher ERA in Major League Baseball right now. That has not happened in a full season since 1969. And it makes you wonder if perhaps the pendulum has shifted a little too far in the direction of sort of bullpenning and getting away from the traditional starting pitcher model that the first century plus of baseball used.
Interesting point. And I want to follow up on that. We are in such an analytics world. What's interesting about analytics to me is, you can't have enough data. I don't know how you feel, but you know, it's how you use the data that's very, very important to me. But for example, like Pro Football Focus is incredible; they do great, great work. But they've never done a draft themselves and put a team together themselves. Okay, so what about you talk about the pendulum? When you've talked to people, why have bullpens struggled this year? Which is what you would not expect because normally I'd like to have my ace go seven innings.
The reality is we've seen teams trying to take this model from the postseason and bring it to the regular season. And that's, not letting your starting pitcher face the lineup more than twice and then going to this sort of parade of relievers. But in doing that, you're asking, in many games, three, four, five, or more relief pitchers to all be good on the same day. And
right.
That's very hard to do. In a regular season, 162 games over 6 months, in the playoffs, you're going to lean very heavily on your best two or three relievers, and you're going to push them harder than you ever would in the regular season. But now you're talking about cycling through seven, eight different relief pitchers, and I just don't think, and I know some people in baseball agree with this, there just aren't enough relief pitchers that are good enough to all deserve the pitch as much as they are forced to with teams using their pitching staff this way. And maybe it makes more sense to just have your starting pitchers go longer and not have to rely on the sheer number of arms that we're relying on in baseball right now.
Okay, here's the pro and the con to it as I see it. The pro is obviously for a hitter, they're facing a new pitcher and there's no book on that particular night. But now let's go to the con part of it, the part you just brought up. If three of the four are really good on that given night, maybe it's the fourth one that loses the game for you.
That's exactly right. And I think talking to some pitching coaches and some people around the game, one thing they brought up, which I think was really smart and sort of counterintuitive in a way, is that we hear so much about you don't want your starting pitcher to face the lineup a third time, which is true. We've seen indisputable data that shows that hitters' performance against pitchers improve the more they see them in a single game. However, a starting pitcher, at least in some instances, facing a lineup for the third time, might be better than the fifth or sixth person in your bullpen who's fresh. And I think maybe teams have forgotten that to some extent, where your starter facing a lineup for the third time is not a good idea, but it doesn't really matter if you're replacing him with sort of a mediocre or subpar pitcher. And look, you look around, look at box scores right now, look at some of the names or pitching innings for major league teams. No one is going to be able to know who all these people are. We're talking about a lot of people rotating up from the minor leagues, sort of the definition of replacement level players. These are people that are forced to pitch big innings in baseball these days. Maybe the starting pitcher the third time through the lineup is better than whomever's coming in to pitch some of these innings.
This brings me to the next part, and I'm a big believer in that the really good ones, I don't care whether it's a player or a general manager or a manager, are the ones that have a feel for their job, a feel for the game. I think the ones that don't rely so much on numbers because they don't have a feel for it. If I've got Justin Verlander out there and he is mowing people down in this given night, I don't care if it's the third time through the lineup. To me, he's the best option because my gut tells me he is.
Right, and there's not that many managers that really see it that way these days. Like, we've seen plenty of times where starting pitchers seem to be cruising along and the manager will go get them because something in the numbers tells them that it's the right thing to do. And look, we don't know. We'll never know if those are the right or wrong decisions. We don't get to see the game play out the other way. So I understand why managers behave this way, especially because you don't get second guessed if you follow if you go with the numbers, right? It's a lot easier to justify your decision when you have some empirical evidence to base it on. It's a lot harder to justify your decision when you're saying, well, this is what I thought was right using my gut. Those are the sort of things that get managers fired, and managers, as you can imagine, understand are cognizant of wanting to keep their jobs.
The Grady Little syndrome.
The Grady Little, yeah, that's a good example. It goes back, you know, 16 years already, which is crazy, but yeah, that's exactly example of a situation where he lost his job over a decision, and maybe it was one that if he had better data or used the data, would have gone differently.
Yeah, you know what? Back then they did have data, and the data is not the precise data we have today. But when Pedro Martinez got to 100 pitches, that's about when you saw the downturn. He actually was one of those guys you could pretty much gauge that when he got to that neighborhood, suddenly the neighborhood didn't look so pretty anymore.
Hmm. You know, I think people in Boston will be second-guessing that one forever. Fortunately or unfortunately, they've won like 10 million championships since then, so hopefully they'll get over that one eventually.
Yeah, I think they're over it, but I'm just using that as an example. I want to ask you about the Major League Baseball attendance. There have been attendance is down a little bit in March, April. The weather's been okay compared to last year. But you already have four teams, Pittsburgh, Cincinnati, Miami, and can't remember the last one, that have had like friends and family in the ballpark. And so the number they give you are tickets sold, and it tells you how few season tickets they have sold. How concerning is that for Major League Baseball right now?
The attendance issue is definitely a concerning one. It's been a concerning issue since last year. To me, what's interesting about the attendance so far, it's only been a month, so I do think it's important to remember.
Yeah.
It's only been a month, and it's been a few enough games that the overall attendance can be affected by literally just which teams happen to have more home games in April. So a lot's going to change as we move forward over the next couple of months. However, that said, this initial data does suggest, and this might sound obvious, but it's something that baseball, I think, doesn't really want to acknowledge, is that teams, generally speaking, that make an effort to try to win seem to be rewarded with attendance, and teams that sort of signal to their fans that maybe we're going to try to be good in 2022 see big drops. I mean, look at the teams that have seen growth in attendance, Philadelphia being the premier example.
Yep.
They went out and had an incredible offseason. They are rewarded. You look at teams that have seen drops. You look at Kansas City. You look at Toronto. You look at San Francisco. these are markets where the team has gone the other direction and look like they're going to be bad for a while and haven't been very active in the off season. And frankly, I like that. I don't think that fans should reward teams that are not trying to win with attendance.
I absolutely agree with that. I know it's look. You and I have to work hard, and obviously you're at ball games, okay, and obviously I announce games, so we're there. But these are consumers. You have to give your consumer something that makes them say they want to buy. In Philadelphia, beyond Real Muto, obviously, signing McCutcheon, doing the other moves that they made, and then obviously the creme de la creme was Harper, they're up 44% in attendance.
Exactly, and that's not a coincidence, right? It's so obvious. No. It's so obvious. It's almost silly to bring it up, right? If you sign players and go and show your fans that we're committed, guess what? People come to the games. Like it shouldn't be. I don't think it's more complicated than that. And everyone's looking for reasons about why attendance is where it is. Well, maybe it's because there's a whole bunch of teams that aren't trying to win. And now look. Tampa Bay is the big exception to all of this, right? The Rays are the best team in the major leagues, and right. No one goes to their games. No one's ever gone to their games. That right. seems to be just a systemic problem that is going to be addressed eventually, whether that means a new stadium or that means that team moves. So I kind of take the Rays out of the equation because that's just sort of been this long-standing problem. But generally speaking, the teams that are winning and the teams that are sort of putting in effort are being rewarded at the box office, and the teams that aren't are seeing big drops. And frankly, it's the way it should be, and hopefully it opens up the eyes of some of these teams that say, well, we don't really have to compete, and tell them, no, you do have to compete if you want your fans to care.
Which brings me, obviously, to Pittsburgh. I mean, let's face it. Yes, the Pirates made the trade last year of Meadows and Tyler Glass now going down to Tampa in exchange for Chris Archer. So, yeah, they made that move. But in the offseason, they did nothing. And you look at the ballpark, it's friends and family night every night. To me, their fans are voting for your approach.
Absolutely, and it wasn't always that way over there, right? You think back just a few years ago when that team was good and was went to the playoffs a few times, that place was rocking
yes.
every night. It was an incredible place. So I don't blame the fans in Pittsburgh for saying, I don't like the direction this has gone. We had this good team. We looked like we were going the right direction. Instead of continuing to get better, ownership decided to sort of pare back and say that they can't afford to spend, or they can't afford this, they can't afford that. Well, if the owner's not going to be able to afford to sign players to make the team good, fans are suddenly not going to be able to afford the tickets, especially because it's not as if ticket prices are going down.
Right.
Even with the teams that are losing, it's not like they're dropping their ticket prices by 20%.
Exactly the point. What did you think of the big contracts? Because you and I both know that Dallas Keuchel and Craig Kimbrell won't sign with anybody until after the draft is over because there's no compensation that will be involved, no compensation picks if they sign after the draft. But what did you think of the contracts that Harper signed, that Machado signed, that finally broke that logjam?
Yeah, look, I think they were deserved. They were two good big contracts for two really good players. You know, Bryce Harper has struggled so far with Philadelphia. There's no doubt about it. But, you know, Scott Boras's agent marketed him as a guy that's going to bring people to the ballpark. And so far, he has brought people to the ballpark. Now, that won't last forever. Eventually, he's going to have to produce. And I think he will. You know, sometimes with these big contracts, guys moving to new teams, it's not unusual for them sort of to struggle at first. They put a lot of pressure on themselves. They press. They want to make a good impression for their new fan base. Manny Machado has not been very good for San Diego yet either. But I think ultimately those guys are going to be fine because the talent is just it's too good in both cases. And those were contracts that sort of pushed the ball forward for future players, for say Mookie Betts, when he becomes a free agent, he seems to be the next superstar that's sort of going to be in line for a giant deal.
Right, exactly. Then you have guys that get extensions. Chris Sale got an extension. He will tell you that so far, his words, I have stunk. When you look at the Red Sox, who obviously were, I mean, there's the old saying in baseball, you win 54, you lose 54, it's what you do in the other 54. Well, last year they were 54-0 in the other 54. Mm-hmm. When you look at them at 13-17 right now, what's missing with them?
Man, it's been wild to see how poorly they have played so far. Really, nothing has gone right for them at all. You know, that great lineup that was so phenomenal last year has just not been there. Mookie Betts has not been as great as he was last year. J.D. Martinez has been really good. They've gotten the boost from Michael Chavis, the young kid they just called up. But, I mean, you mentioned Chris Sale. That's perhaps the number one biggest difference. Right? He's their ace. He seems to be their best pitcher, and he's been awful. He's been really awful. And it's a concern, honestly, the Chris Sale situation. You sort of sit here and go, all right, he doesn't look like the same guy. He wasn't very good down the stretch last year. He wasn't all that good in the playoffs last year. Is this just the new Chris Sale, or is he injured? Like, you do start to wonder what's going on with Chris Sale. And look, we'll see. Maybe he just has to reinvent himself. Pitchers have done that. We see Clayton Kershaw having a lot of success for the Dodgers right now.
Yeah.
He's a different pitcher than he was 3-4 years ago, so it can happen. We'll see what happens with Chris Sale. But that's the biggest concern I'd have if I'm a Boston fan right now, is what is up with our supposed best pitcher.
Last question. This is a big picture question, but it's also on your feel for what you see. What do you like about the sport of baseball right now, and what makes you uneasy?
What I like about it is, to me, very simple, and that there is more incredible, astounding young talent in the game than there's been in a very long time. The amount of just incredible young players who are in their early 20s in the game is so extraordinary. In the case of Mike Trout, we're looking at someone that truly has a chance to go down as one of the greatest players ever to play in the game. And every single year, it seems like there's this new 20, 21-year-old who is so absurdly talented. Right now, it's Vladimir Guerrero Jr., Fernando Tatis Jr. Some of these players that just don't come around that often, that are having incredible success at 19, at 20, at 21. That, to me, is so, so exciting. I hope fans recognize how exciting of a time it is. And I think the problem, the thing that worries me, I think for everyone it's something different. But for me, the balls in play issue is a big one, just how few balls are actually hit on the field of play. There's so many strikeouts now. A lot of home runs, and I think people have mixed feelings about that. I think there's going to be different opinions about how they feel about the surge in home runs. Me, I'm less concerned about the home run boom as I am with the strikeouts. There's just so many strikeouts. There's so many long counts. The games are very long. They're slow. And I think it's a problem. I think maybe sometimes the problem is overstated, at least in terms of the time of game. But sort of things moving faster and more balls hit, I don't think it's good necessarily to go, 3.5 minutes between balls in play, which is sort of where baseball is right now. And I know that's something baseball is worried about, and we'll see what changes are made to sort of inspire more contact.
Agree with all those statements. Thanks so much, Jared. What an absolute pleasure. Great to talk baseball with you today.
Anytime. Thanks a lot.
All right, Jared Diamond, national writer, Major League Baseball for Wall Street Journal. Great to talk with him today. He is knowledgeable on so many different levels. It's great to get his thoughts on where the game is right now. That is my biggest concern about baseball. It's just how often the ball is in play. And the fact that, again, this goes back to feel for the game and where analytics has no feel for the game. Analytics has a great feel for so many areas, but the one area it does not have a feel for the game is the value of the ball being in play. Because anytime you have a group of individuals saying a strikeout is just like any other out, they're absolutely wrong about that. Absolutely wrong. The only time, if the ball's put in play, you put the defense in peril. Well, if there's one or two errors in a game, it changes everything. I'll give you an example. I was watching a game the other night, the A's and Red Sox. A's made two errors in the field in the second inning, and the Red Sox scored six runs. That's where there's a big problem. That's where the disconnect is between analytics and the game itself. If you put the ball in play, it gets people engaged, but it also opens up the door to risk.